Otis Spann with What Will Become of Me. He was the first pianist inducted into the Blues Hall of Fame. That was in 1980, and he toured with Muddy Waters and earned quite a reputation for his unique folksy style of playing the piano and singing. He's widely believed to be the best Chicago blues post-war pianist. Died of liver cancer in 1970 at the age of 46. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And I have a question for you today. So perk your ears up and let's see if you're going to be able to answer this question. Just before I start, though, the news is that Stevie Wonder, you know him, of course, has declared that he will soon be moving to Ghana. He is tired of what's happening in the United States. And he's looking for community, he says. He's looking to revitalize that feeling that there is a sense of community. He's not feeling it in the United States. He's going to go to Ghana and set up shop there. We'll hear some more as he develops his plans. All right. So here's the question. What we've been experiencing as a nation these past few months, what do we call it? What is it? Is it the only thing or the biggest thing affecting us right now? But we don't seem to have a definition for it. We don't seem to know what we are supposed to call this pervasive feeling of helplessness in the face of pervasive death and suffering. More than 500,000 people so far have died, at least the ones that they have counted. I'm sure there are many others not yet counted. But what is it that we calling this? Does the government seem to have control of a situation? Do citizens have some measure of control or ease, that they have some information and they're trying to make adjustments in their lives? What's going on? I mean, when you boil it down, what is this thing that we are experiencing now? There are all kinds of names for it that are being used. It's a pandemic. It's mass infection. It is all kinds of things, but we don't know what it is. And it's weird living this way for months now, not knowing what is killing us off. Yes, they've identified it's the coronavirus. That's what it is being called, the coronavirus. And now we have varying strains of it. But what exactly is happening? And to what degree do we have any control, you and I and others, over what happens to us, to our lives, to our families, to our communities? Do we have any control? Do you feel that you have some measure. There's something that you're in charge of, that you feel that you are exercising some degree of control over this period in our lives and in your own life? Or is it that we just go from day to day and we wait to be told by the powers that be what it is we're supposed to do, and more importantly, what we're not supposed to do, so that we can get through this? We have no sense of security right now. And I was wondering how this resonates with you. What is your state of mind in a situation where you can see the damage done? It's on the news. You know people who have died. You know people who are in the hospital. You know that you're being warned about things that you shouldn't do, so that you stay away from this disease and that this disease stays away from you, but you don't quite know what this is. And we don't know altogether, we don't know what is the right response supposed to be. When will it go away? What is this thing over which we appear to have no control? Do you really think that the government has a handle on this yet? Anywhere, any government? Or do you get a sense that we are just going along because we have no answers? And in the face of having no answers, we convince ourselves that we are doing the very best we can. But what do we call this? State of being. And how do we live in this state of being? How do we go from day to day not knowing? It's a very tough question to face, but there are other questions as well that haven't even come up for public discussion and debate, such as, do we know whether we can put up with this state of being for much longer? Or are we just kidding ourselves? What is coming to the fore for you? I mean, every day you put one foot in front of the other and you try to convince yourself, okay, today hopefully I'll make this day count and nobody I know is going to die, nobody's going to get sick, but I don't know what this is. What is it like living this way? And what are your defenses now? What is your game plan now? Does it even make sense? Or have you completely altered the way you view life and live life insofar as you have it? It's a very troubling question, I know. But this is where we are. The whole nation is here in this space of not knowing. And yet we have to act and pretend as if we do know. The government does it every day. This is what we have to do. This is what you must do. This is the mask you must get. These are the practices you must enact every day. But we don't know. So that's my question. given the day-to-day, minute-to-minute changes that we are making in our lives, has it essentially changed our focus in life, our trajectory in life? Or are we kidding ourselves to believe that we think we have a handle on it and we can pull through, but we have no answers? It's a very dicey position to be in. But I think it helps to talk about it. Let's try that at 888-874-4888. What does it feel like when you get up every day and you're happy that you're up and you can move and you can have breakfast and, you know, you can change your clothes and you can go to work or go for a stroll in the park or something, but you convince yourself you're living, even though something is telling you, you have no clue as to whether in fact you're living. What does that cause you to do? What has it caused you to do to revise your own attitude about life? And is it working? That's the other part. It's one thing to say, oh, I have a different outlook in life, with the assumption that, well, you have a handle on it now. But of course, none of us has a handle on it. We are convincing ourselves that we have a handle on whatever it is that from day to day constitutes life. But what is life now? What is life to you now in these days of the coronavirus? Have your priorities changed? Has your way of looking at the world changed? Are you afraid? Or are you just going to do what you think you must do to get through the day? And if you do, and you do get through the day, you consider it a victory. And then you see what you can do for the next day, day by day. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. I'd love to know what you're thinking, because it's something in your head, and I suspect that there's a way that we, most of us, are thinking now. We don't have a game plan as such, and we have to fashion a way to deal with our insecurities and our fears. And we don't even know what we believe in anymore. Do we believe, even as we speak now, that, yeah, we'll talk again tomorrow? Or have you come to the conclusion you're not making any such bets anymore? Life is to be lived very differently. You have different priorities now. Let's talk about that. 888-874-4888. Tony from Orlando, you're on the air.
Hi, Trish. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I'm pretty sure for everyone during these times, it's going to be different. Whether you're depending on your income, depending on your whether or not you're an introvert or an extrovert, or if you're a social person or an antisocial person. So, but in my case, growing up, I grew up in a very, I would say, like, negative environment. Grew up poor, grew up struggling, pretty much, rough upbringing when I was a kid. And when I was about 19 years old, I started working with some Pakistanis in a pizzeria. And I got to know them personally. They invited me over their homes to have dinner several times. And this one particular man that I became friends with, I remember he started working there as a manager, and he would work from open to close 7 days a week. And the man, it seemed like he never changed his clothes. It seemed like he slept in the same clothes he worked in. And I saw that, and I said, man, you know, typically in America, you know, you work 9 to 5, you know, you got your Saturdays off, you know, you're enjoying yourself. And when I saw this guy working 7 days a week, it seemed like 24 hours a day. The boss man actually sold him the business because he saw how hard he worked. And even after he bought that business and became a millionaire, I saw him go from rags to riches. And even after he was wealthy, I would visit his home, and from time to time, he would ask me to do home repairs because I was a handy, I'm handy. And once in a while, I'll fix something in the bedroom, and I would notice they had no beds. There was sleep on a sheet on the floor. There was no living room set. And this guy was a millionaire. And I witnessed the same things around the same time. I had two jobs. I worked at the pizzeria, and I worked at an apartment complex. And there were a lot of Asians, Indians. And I saw the same behavior where I would go fix something in an apartment, and I would see that, you know, these immigrants can barely speak English, no bedroom set, no living room set. But yet they had a closet full of suits, a Mercedes in the parking lot, and a, you know, six-figure job. And me, born and raised in this country, was making $10 an hour. And that blew my brain away. And I kind of, like, adapted some of that, you know, where I kind of live a lot without. Because the way this society in this country wants you to live is to spend every single dollar impressing God knows who. And I learned from that, sacrifice. And this COVID situation has basically solidified that in me, that living without prepares me for when I need to live without. So for me, nothing has really changed.
But how secure do you feel living this way? Do you feel better that you have a better handle on your life, even though we get reports every day about how many more thousands of people are dead, how many thousands more are sick? How has your mentality, how is it holding up?
Well, like I said, it's holding up good because I've already accustomed myself to, basically I go to work in the morning, and after work, I shoot straight home. I don't leave my home unless it's time to go back to work. As soon as my car hits the house, I don't get back in the car to go and get a bottle of milk or a loaf of bread. Just, you know, I don't go out for small. It has to be, if I'm going to go out, it has to be something really, really important. I do everything on the way to and from work. And that also limits my exposure to getting pulled over by the police, having a car accident, getting into road rage, things like that, because at an early age, I learned that most of the time that I was getting in trouble in life, it was usually because I was doing something that I could have just been home and not gotten in trouble for that, you know. And now that I'm older, that's how I live my life. I don't expose myself too much out there. I don't do the social media. I don't do any of that stuff. I try to stay away from people being in my business and me and being in other people's business. And that's how I live my life. Really simple. Just with my family, raising my family. I focus on my kids, my wife, and my kids. That's it.
Hmm. Well,
but the problem is, like I said, in our society, is everything is you have a birthday. Oh, you want to have a big birthday party. You know, everything is parties and socializing and this and that. And all to me, all that brings is problems and bills. And I rather live a really simple life and be content with what I have. And I sleep better at night for that.
Okay. That's a different take. But you do admit that this is a change in your life. You didn't initiate it, but you're reacting to it.
No, I learned this, like I said, at the age of 19. I learned how this immigrant group of people lived much more drastically different than the typical American way of life. And that opened my eyes to the possibility of, if they can do it, then why can't I do it? Just because I was born in this country and I lived a certain way, because I had to look in, it was like a moment where I looked in the mirror and I said, well, the way I'm doing things, is it better than how they're doing it? Because I see that they're being successful. These are not people, I mean, they work the same crappy job that I worked, but yet they were succeeding. They were progressing. Why? There was something they were doing with their money that I wasn't doing, or I was doing something with my money that they weren't doing. And that's what I realized, that doesn't really necessarily matter how much money you make, but it's what you do with your money that matters the most.
Okay. Thank you for getting us started today. Ed from Queens, how are you living now? And is it something that you think you can put up with on a permanent basis? Or is it something that you're doing simply to get through this moment in our lives, our collective lives?
Hello, you three. How are you?
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Good to hear from you again. You know, me and my phones, as usual. you know, I've come from a poor background. As far as material wealth, I had a large family, and a lot of people left this planet before their time. So, on a personal level, that shapes my view of life and its value. And you know, I haven't allowed this, whatever you want to call it, pandemic, plandemic, to change that view. I go out. I've worked steady since this pandemic started. I work at a facility that is primarily high risk. I've taken some of the precautions with the mask, and you know, I've got my doubts about that as far as my personal research into this as it develops. Some things I agree with, some things I don't. Some things I go along with because of where I work. But as far as my life, I'm going to live it. I mean, nothing is promised to you. I knew a person in Queens just a couple of weeks ago, a young woman, 53. She was getting a car washed, and one of the attendants drove a car out of the car wash and ran her over, and she died. You know, I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. So I'm not going to let this control or curtail my life, because life is a gift. So as me personally, I move like I've always moved. I take precautions, but I'm not gonna subjugate my enjoyment in life to this. You know, I mean, things happen. If you look at the Spanish flu, it ran its course for good, bad, or indifferent, and it died out. We developed herd immunity as a species. Or the virus ran its course, food was a lot different back then. The environment was a lot cleaner back then. I think that that played a part in the Spanish flu's demise, as far as how you could get healthy. I think that this virus has a more prevailing effect because we are unhealthy to begin with. A lot of us have the comorbidities and we don't even know it. There are over 10 million Americans that are type 2 diabetic, and half of them don't even know it. So, I mean, we've got a lot more wrong with us as a society than we did back in the days of the Spanish flu. And the food that we have at our availability to make us healthy is not as healthy as it was back then. Herodotus said, and Imhotep said, let your food be your medicine. And we're coming in a state of sickness. So this virus is going to be more prevalent, especially with the comorbidities. So, but on a personal level, I'm not going to let that change my life. I mean, I'm going to live. You know, you don't, nothing is promised to you. So I'm not going to let that gloom and doom or fear prevail. I'm going to live my life.
But does it worry you that you don't seem, I mean, as a part of a whole, do you feel that you have a handle on this, and that while you're living the best you can under the circumstances, are you solid with that, or do you have doubts, or does it bother you in any way?
I mean, I'm a human being. I have doubts. I can't see the whole picture. I can't see the grand design. So I don't know. You know, like I said, tomorrow I can walk out of the street and hit my truck, you know. But I don't know. So I can't, but I can't live in that. I know what I know. I know what I got to do to keep myself healthy, to keep my family healthy, to work with what the remnants of my community is. And, you know, it's just about doing the next right thing. I mean, that's it. You know, I can't plan on grand designs because I'm not the grand designer. I don't know how this is going to shake out. You know, other countries that seem to have a relatively good handle on it. I mean, you've got places like Vietnam, Ghana, certain parts on the continent, certain parts in Korea and China, where they're paying people a daily wage. In London, 80% of your salary gets paid, for example. You've got national health care. Here, we can't even get $1,400. So I can't worry about what this government does. This government doesn't. My opinion is government doesn't have a handle on anything, let alone this. So I don't expect them to do anything. All I can do is is the next right thing for myself and for those around me. And that's the best I can muster. Everything else, I leave it up to the deity. I'm not a religious person, but I do believe there is a prevailing creating force in this universe that is bent towards compassion and righteousness, and I trust in that.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you very much. Allison from New Jersey, you're on the air. What are you feeling these days?
Good day. I trust you're well.
Thank you.
You know, the first two callers really hit on a lot of points that I was thinking about, too. Although one gentleman made the statement that he was born or grew up poor. And as I look at my past and how I grew up as number 10 of 11 children, and my parents were sharecroppers and moved up to New Jersey from Alabama, I have always felt that I was born into wealth. And I was born into the wealth of a beautiful, large family that provided an environment where I never realized I was, quote-unquote, poor until high school or maybe in college. As I looked back on it, and it was like, oh, wow, I guess we were poor. I never knew that. I never felt that because we had family. We had gardens. We had chickens in the backyard. That's kind of telling on my age a little bit, but we had all of that here in New Jersey as a family of 13. And we had a lot of good times that didn't require having the newest this or the newest that. And that gets me to where we are now with regard to what's going on with COVID. and it's kind of forcing people to look closer to home and to stay a little more grounded. And hopefully it'll help people find the wealth and the richness in everyday things. And that's what's keeping me going. And being somewhat introverted, it's not a bad thing for me. I'm kind of enjoying it because there's less social pressure. The thing that worries me about it, because I do have a teenager living here, is that they are so attuned to the technology and how they interact with technology. I think it's pushing us further toward that and making people introverted in a very odd way, where you're socializing online and it's so different and so new. And as an older person, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that. It worries me to see the kids so focused on the Facebooks and TikTok and all of that stuff. So I think my big worry right now is for the youngsters, and I'd like to hear more from them in a more serious forum. Or maybe I'm just not participating in their forums or fora and seeing the things that really, really matter to them. But that's my big worry out of all of this, is how our youngsters are faring with this in terms of their social growth and their socializing in general. For me, I've always done something that I call living close to the ground. You know, I've always made a good living, but I never felt the need to buy the diamonds and the fur coats back in that day. That was the big deal. And the flashy cars, because having a home, having some property, being able to feed myself and my family, that was paramount. So I didn't need a whole lot more than the sunshine and the earth and all that good stuff. So that's my little rant.
Okay, it's a nice little rant. I want to know, on a day-to-day basis, do you feel, are you conscious of having to tweak some of the things that you've lived with without tweaking for years? Do you feel confident in the way you're navigating your life now in the face of this virus?
You know, I really do, and sometimes the worst feeling I have is a feeling of guilt because I am kind of comfortable, because I've always, like I said, I've lived close to the ground. I saved, I own my home. I don't have a mortgage on it. That was important to me. I live in the home that my parents built. That's a fabulous feeling. I could have bought a bigger house or a big old condo or a waterfront, but I didn't see the need for that, because to me it was more important to know that if something came up like this, some kind of emergency came up, that I would not have to go running to other people or to governmental agencies or anything like that. I wanted to always be self-reliant first, even if it cost me in other more social ways. That I wanted to feel that particular earth under my feet, that I could go in my backyard and plant a garden if I needed to or if I wanted to. So, no, I have a little guilt about actually finding this kind of relaxing and giving me a chance to sit back and do the reading, catch up on the reading I've been saying I was going to do, and keeping busy around the house. So I'm a woman of simple needs.
But you're contented with your life.
That's the correct word. Yes, it is. I am content. Oh, the only thing I would change is that contentment be the ground level for everyone. That we all had a life where we were at least content enough to have the basics, the food, shelter, and clothing. And if you want to move up the Maslow's hierarchy, great. But that safety net that was spoken of years ago, or that level playing field where we all have those basics, that would make me real happy. Because I still think there'd be a lot of room for people to be innovative and creative and so on.
Well, thank you. Very eye-opening. I thank you for that.
Thank you back.
Gamba, Gamba from Florida, you're on the air.
Greetings. How are you?
Thank you. Okay, I'm hanging in.
Wonderful. I somebody uttered to me a while back when I was in Trinidad. They said, they will not live poor and die rich. And I kind of adhere to that, as well as not allowing the this advent of COVID to derail my motto in life, which is to enjoy life to its fullest. Be cautious, limit the exposure to dangerous things, but manage your monies. As the gentleman said, it's not how much you make, but what you keep and what you spend it on. So I try to, at this moment, at this point in my life, enjoy it maximally. I was in Tappan Springs this past Sunday, Florida. It's an area in Florida where it's a Greek area, I guess, a Greek community there, seafront property. And I walked through there and I observed people enjoying themselves, wearing masks. But generally, it's a, you would say, a white community. But the people are enjoying themselves and living life. So I don't think that I will allow COVID to overly or be of a greater import than enjoying life for me.
But have you nonetheless made some changes in your life that you didn't expect that you would make?
Oh, certainly. Certainly. well, I do have a job. I'm still working. Not retired yet. Close to retirement. And my seniority in this particular field of work it affected me in the sense that I was laid off, but very, very, a very short layoff, I would say 6 days, and then I was recalled. But the there has been an expansion of work in my particular field here in Florida, where I am. So there were others that came in with much higher seniority than me. So at that point, I realized that I had to hasten my idea of creating a business outside of my primary vocation, which is aviation. It's aviation. But nonetheless, so now I had to revert to my old skills, and it requires me now to take a test to become a contractor. So yes, it has affected me, but I wouldn't allow it to overwhelm me in the sense of being nervous and anxious about my future. As the gentleman earlier said, we can't predict from one moment to the next. You know, we're not we can't see through. You know, that we don't have that mystic glass to know what will happen in our future. So mm-hmm. Yes. So, mm-hmm.
Do you think, as a whole, in the way the government is relating to the entire nation, do you get a sense that the government is dealing fairly and squarely with the people?
Oh, certainly not. Certainly not. You know, my background is one that I have been listening to you, Utrice. I lived in New York for a little time, right after 9/11. So I heard you prior to that and after that, around that time on the station there in New York. As well as I've been listening to Gary since 1998, around there, when I moved from Michigan to to the Washington, D.C. area. And it has opened up my whole idea of finding out, listening to others, as well as doing my own research or my own reading. So I eventually, I was never a reader. So I think around the age of 30, somebody introduced me to different books, and it just opened up my whole world. So I from that point, having gone through college, and I read one book and I said, it was when he left college he realized that he had just started to learn. So I don't trust many of the things that are being espoused, because we know that these people are being paid to say what they're saying. So how could I trust that? You know, anybody could come and pay me to say anything. There's so many contradictions. I'm not the best person to say that I'm the best analyzer of what's being said, but having listened to you and Dr. Acklin Lynch and Dr. Clark and many others, I have been able now to really use my brain and think. Somebody says something, I don't have to respond right away, but I can think it through and weigh the advantages and the disadvantages. So the government is there. I mean, they're there to get our votes. We know that, you know. So they once they get our votes, then we're cast aside or discarded until we are needed again. So, I don't trust all that they say.
So you sound like you're on an even keel. You figured out a way to keep yourself stable despite all the insanity happening around you. You have stabilized yourself.
I'm fortunate. Yes, I am fortunate to be in the area where I am, and being given the opportunities that are afforded me, whether it be financially and so on. Yes, the thing about it is not being paranoid about the COVID, and paranoid about the things that I really can't control. Mm-hmm. That's my point that I could bring to the fore here.
Thank you.
The things that we can't control.
We're getting quite a bit of instruction. I hope people listening understand that, because I'm taking notes myself on what people are saying. Thanks, Gamba, for participating today. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, you treats.
Good afternoon, E.
Yeah, I'm quite surprised by the reactions, the callers. It reminds me of the book 1984, where it's so touching how we love Big Brother. And then comes the chopper to chop off our heads. Anyway, I don't want to get too dark, but I'm kind of like shocked that people are so like complacent with what's going on. And they seem to have everything under control in their own little Idaho. But I don't know, for me, when 9/11 happened, my whole life sort of went into a different mode. And I went into like this survival mode when I saw the extent that they would go to have us believe things and the things that would be done. And we just take it like, you know, it's just like something normal in life. But Gary was talking about a vaccine that was going to be mandatory for us all to get 6 months before a virus came out. And I kept saying to myself, how could they get people to just take a vaccine for no reason? I don't see people going along with that. But then sure enough, 6 months later, out comes the COVID thing. And it sort of made me tie it in with what Gary was saying. I don't know how you couldn't. And if you listen to Gary Null since 1990-something, I mean, you should be paying attention to what he's saying. So this was very important to me. It's not a new thing that Gary Null talks about vaccine, because he's been talking about vaccines for a long, long time, usually when it concerns children, because they force our children to get these vaccines. I'm hearing numbers like 70-something vaccines in their first 2 years. And I just don't. I have my own experience with that growing up. And I don't know. Right now, I'm feeling very alarmed and very concerned for people, because I care about people more than I care about myself. I care about animals more than I care about myself. It's, you know, at this point of things, and you know, I'm retired now, and, you know, I'm going to start going, but I think Stevie Wonder's making a good move, and I don't know really what to say about a plan of some sort. I keep thinking about, you know, finding some place. I could do something by myself, but I'd like to have people, you know. I like to have company and socialing, and the people, if they could like find a way, maybe Gary Null would help, and we could find some land and build some structures, some like dome structures or something, and have a place to go to where we could feel safe at least, because I'm not feeling too safe in this, what's going on here. I mean, they say the vaccine is not mandatory, but eventually, once I get enough people taking it, I'm overhearing countries having rules about you can't do this and you can't do that unless you have proof that you've been vaccinated. So I'm very skeptical about the whole thing, and it's putting me into a nervous place. And like I said, it's mainly because, you know, I have family down here. I talk to my cousin, the same age as me, and he doesn't want to know any of it. Anything that I'm saying, he don't want to know about. My daughter's in her 40s. She's been a teacher for 20. She don't want to know nothing about what I'm saying. I don't know, Eutrice. I'm puzzled is the word.
But puzzled as you are, how do you feel in and of yourself in the process of handling all of this craziness from day to day? Do you feel you're on an even keel? Do you feel things are out of control? Do you feel that you don't know where next to turn or what to believe?
Yeah, it's worse now than ever. Like I said, when I was 9, I watched the president's Kennedy's head being blown apart. And then a lot of other things affected me. But then 9/11, and now this is like the part two of the 9/11. And it's like people are going along with it so easy. So it's what I see, what happened in Texas. It's devastating. I was out of power for 6 days. I got along. I got eventually got war. I can't understand how this government could allow what's going on. You know, They can control weather. There's a lot of things that I'm thinking are going on that most people aren't thinking about. They're just trying to get through day to day. And I understand if you've got a job, that sort of like keeps you in a box. And if you have young children, it's you're in a box. And that's why they want our lives to be this way. People talk about going to college, going, you know, what did you think that was? That was what they want you to learn to serve them. Like David from Brooklyn said, this is all brainwashing. You know, we went to school to learn the golden rule. We studied hard. We memorized the dates, the spelling words. We did everything they asked us to do. And if you think about it, we're leading ourselves to our own end. by becoming scientists and technologists and engineers, we're doing all the dirty work for them so they can replace us with machines, and then we're expendable. Then we're just a liability. What is the purpose of all this advancement if it's going to lead to our end? And I don't think life is better now than it was back in the 60s when we didn't have cell phones and computers and air conditioners and all this fancy stuff. I think it's complicated things more and made people more like selfish and just caring about them, material things. We've lost touch with what life is really about, you know?
Hmm. Well, you said a mouthful today, that's for sure. And given us pause to rethink and to see whether you're making sense to us. But I thank you so much for being so sincere in what you offer to us to think about. Thank you so much. Thank you. Larry from Brooklyn, you're on the air. I'll tell you that you don't have unlimited time, but you have some time.
Okay, Therese. It just frustrates me that people aren't really curious as to where this whole disease came from. And I'm very suspicious. I've heard reports. I'd like to know why they're working on that thing in the lab. From what I understand, they're trying to make it more harmful to man. And people just accept that it's a natural phenomenon, that this thing got out. And I'm very suspicious. I heard that Anthony Fauci was one of the people that were financing this whole research years ago. And I'd like to know why. What are they planning to do with this? You know, and people aren't asking enough questions about it. And I don't know. I'm just very frustrated. And I don't know who to believe. I feel like this is a big... Somebody's pulling the wool over our eyes again. And
so how are you living psychologically and emotionally day to day with all of this swirling around your head?
Well, I have to say I'm definitely in a state of depression because of the, forced to be inside and not seeing friends and relatives and, I mean, I'm doing the best I can. You know, I live alone anyway, so it's no big change for me. But mentally, it's definitely a downer, you know?
Do you see it getting better or worse as you are experiencing it?
I wish I could tell you that it's going to get better, but I don't see that coming anytime soon. I mean, not as quick as we'd like. I don't know who to believe, you, Therese. I really don't.
I know, I know. That's the whole thing. We don't know who to believe. And in a situation like that, you're always walking with this shadow. You know, there's always a shadow.
Yeah.
No matter how much you try to come into your own, you always have the shadow. Still stalking. Thank you so much, Larry. You've polished off the last few minutes of our program today, but it certainly should not be the last time you talk about this. And we'll see where we could fit in a follow-up program. Thank you all for contributing. I'm always so proud to be in your company because you offer so much for us all to think about. And I thank you for that, because it's an earnest effort that you make every single time. So let's talk again tomorrow. Bye-bye.